Nen Yim settled in the pilot's couch and placed the cognition hood on her head. The ship hadn't come with one, but it had been an easy matter to implant a Yuuzhan Vong matrix ganglia to the alien but relatively straightforward neural web. It ought to respond like any Yuuzhan Vong ship. She hadn't been able to regenerate all the ship's systems and had replaced them with specially bioengineered equivalents. She had installed Dovin Basals in the place of the abominable machine drive. She wouldn't have known how to repair that even if she had wanted to. A flutter of tension moved through her as she melded with the ship's senses. Where were the Jedi? A few moments later, the two were on board and Nen Yim dilated the inner and outer locks.
Tahiri's hurt, the male Jedi called. It's an amphistaff wound.
Do what you can for her, she told him. I can't help at the moment. We have to leave.
Hoping once again that the inelegant mixture of Sikoden and Yuuzhan Vong technology wouldn't fail her, she willed the ship to fly. In a blur, they were through the opening, though she felt it scrape along her skin on one side.
We're supposed to meet the Prophet at the shrine of Yun Harla, the Jedi told her.
She settled the ship down next to the shrine and opened the hatch. Outside, a breeze was blowing, thick with the astringent scent of blister flowers. She noticed a movement from behind the shrine and saw the grotesque figure of a shamed one coming toward her.
This, then, must be the Prophet, she murmured.
He was tall, and his body looked well-formed enough, save for a lump beneath his left arm that was probably a limpen implant gone bad. He wore a masker that bore every mark of the shamed she could imagine, as if he had catalogued every possible disfigurement before having it made, as if he was determined to carry the burden of all the shamed on his own neck.
I am Yuuzhan, he said as he boarded.
His gaze fastened on her, intense, nearly animal. This was no simpering shamed one, no.
I am Nen Yim.
I am honored, master, the Prophet replied. You undertake a great task. All went well?
Could have gone a bit more smoothly, Corin muttered.
According to plan, Nen Yim said.
Tahiri being stabbed was not in the plan, Corin said.
The one who was shaped is injured, the Prophet exclaimed.
A risk we all take, Nen Yim pointed out.
She's dying, Corin said. Isn't there anything you can...
He stopped when someone else stepped into the ship. He yanked out his infidel weapon and ignited it.
No! Nen Yim shouted. This is Harar, a priest. He's going with us.
The male Jedi crouched into a fighting stance.
No! I...
A blast of plasma slammed into the ship. The skies were no longer quiet. Cursing, Nen Yim realized she had disengaged from the long-range sensors. As she re-engaged now, she saw a flyer above them and 10 more within range. She closed the hatch and jolted the Dovin Basals to life. The ship jumped straight up, slamming into the atmospheric flyer. The flyer flipped over and smashed into the shrine, then slid into the water below. Food for the Fa'ili. She turned toward what she perceived to be the most open space. She saw with some relief that she was faster than the pursuing ships, if only marginally so.
Prepare for a dark space jump, she called back.
Bloody!
The male Jedi sputtered.
No! Not this close to the planet! We're still in the atmosphere!
That's bad? Nen Yim asked.
Yes, that's bad! Have you even laid in a jump?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You've never flown?
No.
Watch her,
Corin told the Prophet, casting a glance at the priest as he did so. He moved quickly to stand next to the Shaper.
Okay, he said. Look, we'll make a short jump first. Borlaeus, do you have a star chart in here, anything like that?
She shook her head.
No, she said. Or maybe. I'm not attuned enough to see if there is one, but there are ships approaching.
Any way to show me the ships?
Yes.
A nearby wall panel coruscated, revealing a surface that raised icons to represent ships and their movements.
Does this thing have any guns?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, fly fast and figure out how to plot a jump.
Corin felt like strangling something, possibly himself, for letting such a relatively simple mission get so far out of control.
Why can't any of these stinking ships have normal controls? He muttered.
You mean controls of metal and plasteel? The shaper asked. Yes.
Yes!
It does, she replied. They are beneath that screen, covered by a lamina. The sight of them offended me.
Oh, I see, Corin said, as he staggered toward the place she had indicated. You're completely insane. You've appointed yourself pilot. You've no idea what you're doing, and you don't mention to the only qualified pilot that there are controls.
He ripped off the lamina, revealing an entirely familiar set of instruments.
I can fly this, Corin grunted. I can fly this. Get back there and help Tahiri.
I don't
know what you're doing, he repeated. We'll all be killed, here, now, and you'll never see your mystery planet.
Very well, Ninyam said.
She removed the cognition hood and started back toward Tahiri.
If she doesn't live, Corin called back to her, the whole deal is off.
Then she will live, Ninyam shot back.
Corin threw the ship into a scissor roll, dodging a barrage of plasma bursts. The controls were on the old-fashioned side, but the ship itself handled like nothing he'd ever flown. And despite what Ninyam had said, he found controls for lasers.
Well, let's see if they work.
He veered hard port and up, making the turn in half the time a ship this size ought to, and came in above one of the pursuing skips. Hopefully, he squeezed off a few shots. The console said he had 4 forward lasers, only 1 fired. The beam scorched out and was swallowed by the skip's void. Corin whisked by the skip, feeling rather than seeing the other 2 on his tail, and then pulled up hard and grinned when the fire from the 2 pursuing skips struck the one he'd just shot at.
I guess they don't have their war coordinator online yet, he said.
It's being jammed, Nenyim's voice floated up from the back. I've seen to it.
Ships were everywhere now, and not just in the direction he was leaving, and not all just skips.
Hello? Corin murmured to himself. What's that?
The silhouette looked familiar, but he couldn't be sure. It might not even still be functioning, but at the moment, it was his only hope. He changed course toward the object. A skip whirled in from below starboard, and from sheer curiosity, he tried the other weapon the ship seemed to have, but nothing happened. The skip, on a wrong vector to keep up with him, missed its own shot and went on, banking to come after him, but losing kilometers in the process. 6 or 7 skips were going to have a shot at him in about a minute, but the satellite he'd seen at long range was pretty close now. Basically, a 5-meter diameter sphere, bristling with knob-like protrusions, it hung quietly in its orbit. He fired his single laser at the sphere and whooped when the blue sheen of a shield went up. Laser light was suddenly everywhere as the sphere began to whirl in complex maneuvers, firing at every ship it saw. Corin ignored those shots directed at him and just punched the drive as hard as it would go, which was hard. The skips went wild, spinning around the satellite, firing at it. Only 1 or 2 recovered from the surprise quickly enough to follow his new vector. And by the time they were even thinking about catching him, he'd laid in his calculations and was watching the star sleet away. Whew, he said, finally able to relax.
What was that? Some sort of war machine?
With a start, Corin realized the Prophet was standing just next to him.
No, he said. It's a training device for star pilots. Once fired on, it goes into offensive mode. Of course, the lasers are so weak they can't do any damage, so most of the power goes to its shields. But with their voids gobbling the first few shots, the Yuuzhan Vong pilots would take a while to figure that out.
Tahiri came to with Nen Yim bending over her. "She will be weak," she was telling someone. "Perhaps for some time, the arm might be useless. It is too soon to say."
"Corin?" Tahiri mumbled. She turned to see him. But Nen Yim wasn't talking to Corin. She was talking to a Yuuzhan Vong, a thin man with a head wrap. A priest. Tahiri reached for her lightsaber, but didn't find it there.
"Corin!"
she shouted.
"I'm here," the familiar voice said. "Calm down. We seem to be among friends."
He didn't sound convinced.
"Who are you?" Tahiri asked the priest.
"I am Harar."
"Another of our merry band of pilgrims," Corin grunted.
"The Shapars and the Shamed are not the only ones with curiosity about this new world," the priest explained. "I arranged to meet Nen Yim at the same place as the Prophet."
"Then you embrace our heresy?" the Prophet asked.
"I embrace nothing," Harar replied. "I reject nothing. But Shimra has gone to great lengths to keep this planet from our knowledge. I want to know why."
"Where are we?" Tahiri asked.
"Hyperspace," Corin replied. "You missed our exciting exit. This really is some ship."
Tahiri was taking in the rest of their surroundings now. "What sort of ship is this?" she asked.
"The ship is from Zonama Seacot," the Prophet replied. "It was badly damaged. The Shaper healed it. It is good. We arrive at Zonama Seacot, returning one of its own."
Tahiri was about to ask more, but Corin spoke up.
"Oh, yes, that," he said. "We're not going to Zonama Seacot."
All eyes turned to Corin. Yusha was the first to speak.
"Blessed one, what can you mean? After all we've done, my followers died so that we might make this voyage. They put their faith in you."
"And I put my faith in your words, Yusha. Your promise that this voyage would include you and you alone. Now we have a Shaper and a priest, and I don't know anything about either of them."
"I explained about the Shaper," the Prophet said. "I knew nothing about the priest."
"Consider,"
Harar interposed.
"Nen Yim and I risk far more than this Prophet. He is already hunted, already condemned. He has little to risk on this journey and everything to gain. I, on the other hand, am a powerful, an honored priest. I have not only consorted with Jedi, but I seek Zonama Seacot, a planet absolutely taboo to us. If Shimra learns of this, I will be dispatched without honor."
Corin nodded. "Probably. Unless Shimra himself planned this whole fiasco."
"I assure you he would never do such a thing,"
Harar replied. "But I've only your word for that. And we are, you know, on opposite sides of a war." "Not too diplomatic, Corin." He started again.
"Look, you three aren't the only ones who think Zonama Seacot is important. There are already Jedi there, negotiating with it. Your people have attacked the planet at least once. Bringing one of you there, especially one seeking peace, that was one thing. Bringing three of you is another matter."
"Contact these other Jedi," the Prophet urged. "Discuss it with them. Surely they will agree that if peace is to be achieved, the initiative must come from both the Jedi and the Yuuzhan Vong."
"He's right," Tahiri said. Corin shot her a hard look. "I'd like to speak to Tahiri alone," he told the others.
"Of course,"
Harar said. The others didn't say anything. But they stayed where they were as Corrin escorted Tahiri to what was appeared to be some sort of common area.
"Corrin," she began, but he cut her off.
"No," he snapped. "Listen, we're outnumbered here. I can't have you disagreeing with me in front of them."
"Then maybe you should stop making decisions without consulting me. We're a team, remember?"
"And I'm by far the senior member of the team," Corrin said. "If you want to disagree with me, fine, but do it in private."
"Contact Kenth," Tahiri said. "See what he thinks. Or better yet, talk to Master Skywalker."
"Well, it seems Sakotan ships don't come equipped with holonet transceivers," Corrin replied. "If they did, I would do just that."
"We could go to Mon Calamari, get a decision from the Council."
Corrin lowered his voice. "That's where I'm going to tell them we're going."
"But we aren't? Where are we actually going?"
"Zonama Seacot."
"What? But you said..."
"I lied. I wanted to see what their reaction would be."
"And?"
"I can't tell yet. Let's give it a few days. See what shakes out."
Despite its organic origins, the Sakotan ship was laid out along lines more similar to the metal and plasteel ships Tahiri had known than to the Yuuzhan Vong vessels. Behind the cockpit was a crew cabin comfortably large enough for 6 or 7 people, and 6 somewhat more cramped sleeping cells. Behind that was a spacious storage area that looked more Yuuzhan Vong in design. Nen Yim had had room to spare when she took out the old hyperdrive. It was filled with things that Tahiri remembered from the Shaper Laboratory on Yavin. She looked in only once. Whatever the original crew of the ship had eaten had been replaced by Moor, a Yuuzhan Vong yeast-based staple. She and Corrin settled down to a meal of it around a table that extruded from the floor, sprouting like a mushroom when a discolored place on the wall was stroked. None of the Yuuzhan Vong seemed to be in earshot. The Prophet was nowhere to be seen, and Nen Yim was back in her makeshift laboratory, as was Harar.
"You like this stuff?" Corrin grunted, reluctantly taking another mouthful.
"No one likes it," Tahiri said. "Yuuzhan Vong don't eat for enjoyment. Unless it's to make a statement, you know, eating the flesh of the Vuasa you killed in ritual combat or whatever."
They both turned at a soft sound in the doorway. Harar stood there.
"I hope I'm not intruding," the priest said.
"Not at all," Corrin said. "Can I help you?"
The priest nodded.
"It's been 4 days. May I ask when we reach Mon Calamari?"
Tahiri shot Corrin a glance.
4 days, she sent in the Force. No sign of betrayal.
Corrin didn't answer in the same way, but pursed his lips and nodded.
"Where's the Prophet?" he asked.
"Locked in his cabin, praying, presumably," the priest replied.
"Okay," Corrin said. "Let's get everyone together. I..."
And then the ship screamed.
"What the?"
Corrin leapt up and stumbled toward the helm.
"Are we under attack?"
Harar asked. By that time, Corrin could see stars through the transparent canopy.
"I don't know," he said. "But given my luck so far on this trip, I wouldn't doubt it."
"This region isn't charted," Tahiri said. "Maybe we hit a gravitic anomaly."
Corrin bit back a reprimand for telling that much, but decided to take his own advice and not dress the young woman down in front of the Yuuzhan Vong. "We're in charted space," he said instead. Which was true. Barely.
"Then what could it be?"
"Dovin Basal Interdictor Mine, maybe? The Yuuzhan Vong had them set up all along the major routes to pull ships out of hyperspace."
He'd been rolling the ship to try to discover the cause of their sudden reversion. Now he saw it. It wasn't what he was expecting. He was staring down the pointy end of a white wedge larger than many planet-bound cities, and he suddenly felt much younger, not in a good way.
"That's an interdictor, all right," he said. "An imperial interdictor."
"What's it doing way out here?"
"I'm not even sure where here is," Corrin grumbled.
"What is wrong?"
Nen Yim appeared from aft.
"We've just been yanked out of hyperspace by the Imperials."
"The Imperials?" Nen Yim said. I'm no tactician, but aren't they... Oh, they think this is a Yuuzhan Vong ship.
The lady takes the hand, Corrin said. A laser seared along the vessel's side, and he fought for control.
Jump to hyperspace, Nenyum said. I see no nearby planets.
I can't. It's an interdictor. It'll pull us right out again and probably fry the engines as well.
Not necessarily, Nenyum said.
No, interdictors work just fine on Yuuzhan Vong hyperdrives. It's simple physics.
Yes, but...
She suddenly stopped. What? Corrin shouted back over his shoulder.
You must give me your promise of secrecy, the Shaper said,
her spooky hair doing particularly spooky things.
I can't do that, Corrin sighed. Not if you've got something that can be used against us.
I certainly cannot divulge war secrets to you without your vow of secrecy, Nenyum said.
Master Yim, Harar interjected. If we die and our mission fails...
What mission? Nenyum snapped. He won't take us to Zonama Seacot. He's taking us to Mon Calamari, probably to be imprisoned. I would rather die here, especially if it prevents placing yet another weapon against us in their hands.
We are going to Zonama Seacot, Corrin shouted. We're on our way there right now, but it's going to be a mighty short trip if something doesn't change soon.
Nenyum's brows lowered dangerously.
Is this true?
Harar gripped the Shaper's arm.
I do not fear death any more than you do, Nenyum. But if you would see this planet...
It is untested, she said. A variant of a shaping one of my apprentices developed. I brought it in hopes of experimenting under more controlled circumstances.
Well, test it now, Corrin said. Because in about 10 seconds...
Nenyum nodded and slipped on her cognition hood. A moment later, Corrin felt something pass through the ship and then release.
What did we just do?
Nenyum actually smiled.
If this works, the artificial gravitic anomaly should vanish in a moment. I suggest when the moment arrives, you take us into hyperspace.
Tahiri, lay in a micro jump, Corrin said.
The young woman nodded and bent to the task. A laser tore through the cabin behind them, a direct hit that pierced both hulls. Air screamed away into vacuum, and Corrin felt as if he had a hot wire through his gut. He could only imagine what a pilot truly attuned to the ship would feel. Then the wound healed, and the air stopped getting thinner. Neat trick, that. But he wondered what the ship's healing limits were, and got an answer of sorts from the ship itself. Another hit like that would be too much.
We're no longer being held, Tahiri said.
Life is good, Corrin replied, and punched them to where the stars didn't shine.
I don't suppose you're going to tell me what that thing was, Corrin asked, as his pulse began to slow to something approaching normal.
I don't suppose so, no, Nenyum replied. But its field test seems to have gone quite well.
Yes, congratulations, Corrin said.
Not to interrupt, Harar said, but I'm wondering if what you said about our destination is true.
Corrin turned and noticed that the Prophet had joined them.
Yes, he said. It's been our destination from the very first.
You deceived us,
Nenyum accused.
Why?
The Prophet drew himself to his full height and crossed his arms.
To see how we would react, he said, if we had tried to force the location of the planet from him, then he would have known we were not to be trusted. And we would never have finished the trip.
He looked pointedly at Corrin.
Isn't that correct, Jedi Horn?
That about sums it up, Corrin replied. That's a pretty savvy analysis for a holy man.
Understanding, the Prophet said, is the essence of enlightenment.
The next jump brought them to the fringes of an unnamed star system. The primary appeared as a tiny blue sphere, but around it sparkled a vast ring that shone as if it were made of a few hundred trillion Karuska gems. Tahiri watched in fascination. Sometimes it seemed cloud-like, sometimes almost liquid.
"You must have seen many such wonders," Nenyim said.
Tahiri had heard the shaper's approach, but hadn't turned.
"Doesn't matter," she said. "Every star system is unique. Every star system has its own beauty." "This one certainly has. Is that ice?"
"I would imagine," Tahiri said. "I wasn't trying to figure it out. I was just enjoying the sight of it."
"Perhaps the system is poor in heavy elements. The original torus of matter condensed into ice balls, which were then torn apart by tidal forces."
"Maybe a wandering giant made it as a wedding gift for a nebula," Tahiri said.
"Why would you assert such a ridiculous explanation?"
The shaper seemed truly puzzled. "Why must you pick everything apart?" Tahiri asked. "Besides, if you believe Yun Yuzhan made the universe from his severed body parts, you ought to be able to believe anything." Nen Yim was silent for a moment, and Tahiri thought the conversation was probably over.
"Belief is a strange thing," the shaper said at last. "It has immense inertia. My master did not believe in the gods at all."
"And you?"
"I think there must be something behind them that is real. I do not think they are real in the orthodox sense."
"That's interesting. What do you think they are?"
"I've no idea. I don't have even a guess to use as a starting point."
"How about this?" Tahiri mused. "Here's a guess for you. Your gods are actually a misunderstanding of the Force.
The energy field you Jedi claim informs your powers?"
She sounded dubious. "You don't believe in the Force?"
"In the sense that it's clear you draw on some sort of energy to perform your tricks. As your machines draw on a power source, yes. That does not mean it is some all-pervasive mystical energy with a will of its own, as you Jedi seem to believe. Indeed, if it is, how can you explain the fact that the Yuuzhan Vong do not exist in the Force?"
"Well, that's a mystery," Tahiri said. "But the Force isn't like a battery. It's a lot bigger than that."
"So you believe? If so, perhaps your Force and our gods are both misunderstandings of something that somehow encompasses us all."
"You believe that?" Tahiri asked.
"Certainly not," the shaper replied. "But thank you."
"For what?"
"At least I have a guess to proceed from, for now."
She glanced about.
"Where is Corin Horn?"
"He's taking a break before the next jump to hyperspace. What did you need to see him about?"
"I don't want to raise any undue alarm, but I think something is wrong with the ship."
"Wrong?"
"Yes. The space folding function of the Dovin Basals seemed erratic in the last jump. I checked them, and there may be a problem."
"What sort of problem?"
"I think they are dying."
"Well?" Corin asked Nenyim. "What can you tell me?"
They had made four more jumps since Nenyim had given them the assessment of the ship's living engines, and each had been rougher than the last.
"The deterioration is marked," Nenyim said. "The Dovin Basals were damaged by the Imperial ship, and the gravitic strains of repeated jumps have worsened their condition."
"Why didn't you tell me this before the repeated jumps?" Corin asked.
"It took a few passes through dark space before I could be certain. Also, it is clear that my understanding of Sokotan biology is flawed, or this would not be happening. I need more samples."
I don't think it's biology, Tahiri said. I think it's the Force. They both turned to her.
Explain, Corin said.
This ship exists in the Force, Tahiri explained. You can feel it, can't you, Corin? And the nearer we get to Seacott,
the stronger the connection becomes, he agreed.
Yeah, I felt that.
It was as if the ship was eagerly returning to a long-lost family.
So maybe this ship is rejecting the engines because they don't exist in the Force. And the closer we get to Zonama Seacott, the stronger that rejection becomes.
That seems unlikely, Nenyim said. The Force, whatever it may be, should not govern simple biological reactions. The links between the Seacotan ship and our engine should work.
Yet they don't, and you don't know why, Tahiri said, a little too smugly for Corin's tastes.
The engines can stand another jump, maybe two or three if we do it soon,
Nenyim offered. Corin sighed, looking at his charts, which were easily as speculative as the topic they were discussing.
It's risky, he said, but I believe I could get us to the system in one more jump, assuming there's not an uncharted black hole in our path. But if Tahiri is right, as soon as we arrive, the engines will fail, if they don't fail during the jump.
But we'll be there, Tahiri said. And even if we can't land, Master Skywalker, Jason, and Mara can help us.
Fine, Corin said. Everybody to crash couches. This could get rough.
It got rough. Even before reversion, something felt wrong, and the instant they hit normal space, the stars went out again as the ship somehow made an extra micro jump of its own. In the jolting, Corin was reminded of a stone skipping on water, and hoped it was a poor analogy and they didn't keep on jumping. Existence rushed back, but there were no stars. Instead, enormous bands of roiling red and yellow filled their tumbling view. Tumbling and falling down a gravity well, Corin realized. They were caught in the pull of a titanic planet, at least the size of Yavin 4, probably larger. He managed to kill the tumble and roll, which made it at least possible to get their bearings. His sensors were showing another planet. This one, roughly the size of Corellia, about 100,000 clicks away. And there was something else, too. Something in orbit around it. A moon? They were too far away to tell.
We've got a chance, Corin said. If we can get close enough to Zonama Seacott, its gravity well will have a stronger pull on us than the big planet. If the engines quit now, well, we're all gonna gain some weight.
He pulled the drive levers back, and the ship throbbed in protest.
Oh, yes, he said. We made it.
He pointed at the moon, Zonama Seacott.
We're falling that way now.
You did it, Tahiri said.
The ship did it, Corin replied.
Of course.
What? He flashed her a smile.
Of course, we are still falling, and while the jolt at the end won't be quite as hard, it's still going to smart.
It's always going to be something with you, isn't it? Tahiri said. You've got a Dovin Basel left.
For how long? If we can't find Luke...
I'm trying, Tahiri informed him. I've been trying since we got here, but all I can sense is that planet. It's so strong in the Force. It drowns everything else out. They watched the moon grow. Both Jedi continued to reach out through the Force, but if Jason and the rest were there, Tahiri certainly couldn't sense them.
Perhaps it isn't the right planet,
Harar suggested.
It is the planet, the Prophet averred.
The planet of prophecy.
This ought to be the place, Corin replied. The ship certainly thinks it is.
He checked his long-range sensors again. Whatever was orbiting the planet had moved behind the horizon now. He wasn't sure, but the last read on it had looked suspiciously like an Imperial frigate.
Ah, Sith spit, he grumbled.
What is it? Tahiri asked.
Remind me never to fly a ship that has a mind of its own, especially a homesick one,
Corrin said. It's got us on a landing vector.
That is what we want, is it not? The Prophet asked.
Yes, but it would be nice to land near our friends, Corrin replied. Especially since I've a feeling we won't be taking off again. Not in this ship.
I suggest survival is our first priority, Yusha answered.
Right. Okay, folks. We're about to say a close hello to Zonama Seacott. I suggest you all strap back in. The slow part of this trip is over.
He hit the atmosphere too steeply and had to apply a hard push from the Dovin basal to correct. The ship winced, but did its job, and they whistled down through the upper atmosphere. Water and jungle whipped by beneath, and Corrin had to agree with Harar. It looked like any of 100 worlds, but it felt different. Tahiri was right. The force was strong here, but strange, and put up a sort of white noise he couldn't filter through. He had more important things to worry about. The treetops were coming up fast. It was time to break for real. He engaged the Dovin basal, but felt it falter almost immediately, and then kick back in. Their airspeed dropped, but not nearly quickly enough. He couldn't push the engine any harder, even if he wanted to, though. They mowed a swath through treetops, and the Dovin basal went suddenly offline. Unpowered, the ship was a hollow rock thrown by a giant. And without an inertial compensator, they were going to be pasted all over the inside of it. They hit something very hard, and then, desperately, he reached out through the force, felt Tahiri reaching out too, and then he felt Seacott, immense, powerful, and indifferent. But something happened, a connection, and they were suddenly falling like a feather. For just a second. Then freefall returned, and instants later, they came to ground. Hard.
How is everyone?
Corrin turned painfully in his seat to survey his companions. The return chorus assured him that everyone had made it through. He looked out through the viewport at a forested landscape.
Well, he told the others, we seem to be here. I suggest we see if the hatch will open and find out just what we came all this way for.
A shock ran through Nen Yim as she stepped onto the leaf-littered soil of Zonama Seacott. It went from her toes to the tips of her tendril headdress and left her gaping. She realized her mouth was open and closed it. She glanced at her companions, all of whom had come out of the ruined Sikoten ship by now. Harar and the Prophet looked stunned, as she must. The two Jedi looked curious, but the planet clearly hadn't had the impact on them that it had on her.
I must begin immediately, she said.
This is the place,
the Prophet asserted. Oddly enough, he sounded surprised. Harar said nothing, but the look he shot the Prophet could only have been described as respect. Suddenly annoyed, Nen Yim went back into the ship to get some of her tools. After a moment, she realized Yusha was following her.
What do you want? She asked.
I would like to assist you.
Very well, she said. This ship is no longer suitable to function as a laboratory. I wish to move my apparati outside and contrive some sort of shelter. You may help with that, if you wish.
Corrin wiped the sweat from his brow.
After this, he said, our next priority is to find Luke.
He sliced his lightsaber through the base of another sapling and added it to the pile. Nearby, Tahiri did the same.
There. That ought to be enough for the frame.
I don't know about you, but the planet is still interfering with my senses. How do we find Master Skywalker without the Force? Tahiri asked. It's a big planet. We can't just start walking and hope to run into him.
No, but this place is supposed to be inhabited. By Faroans, if I understand correctly.
and they ought to be able to help us get in contact with the others.
I haven't seen any signs of civilization, Tahiri said.
Neither have I, Corin admitted. But tomorrow, I'll start looking. Just short searches, and maybe I can talk Harar and the Prophet into going with me.
What about me? Tahiri asked. What do I do?
I want you to keep an eye on the Shaper.
Okay, Tahiri replied.
Corin slung the poles over his shoulder and started back toward the clearing near the ship, where Nen Yim was depositing a variety of weird biots.
What have you done?
Harar asked when he saw them. His tone was dense with reproach.
Nen Yim said she needed a shelter, Corin explained. The ship is pretty twisted up, and probably won't be very pleasant when its organic components start to deteriorate. So that means building a hut. These will furnish the frame.
You killed living things to build a shelter? Where to stay in dead life?
Unless you brought the means to grow your own, yes. I don't know about you, but I don't want to sleep in the rain, unless you have a better idea.
I consider, the priest pleaded. We came to this place following the legends of a living planet, a planet like no other. If these legends are true, is it best we begin by killing things? What if the planet is angered?
Corin glanced at the saplings. Unfortunately, he confessed, you're right. I wasn't thinking.
Which means, I suppose, we need to find some sort of natural shelter. Would you care to accompany me, Harar?
I would, the priest said. And thank you for considering my words.
What about you, Yushar? Corin asked, hopefully.
I am about to go on a collecting expedition, Nen Yim said. He will accompany me.
That sounds interesting, Tahiri said. Can I go?
No Manor watched Nen Yim move among cane-like plants, stroking them with her eight-fingered shaper's hand, and occasionally recording cryptic entries in a portable Kosa. The Jedi brat sat on a log some distance away, pretending not to be interested, but she was watching them nonetheless. The Shaper had been collecting for hours, but so far as No Manor could see, she hadn't collected anything. She had examined trees, shrubs, moss, fungi, and arthropods with singular intensity. She hadn't shared anything of what she was thinking, though the expressions that flitted across her usually impassive face indicated that she found much to think about. One thing had come clear, though. Shimra was right to fear this planet. He had seen the faces of his Yuuzhan Vong companions, knew they felt the same affinity for this world that he did. When he'd made his prophecy, he'd been mining a few scraps of intelligence and some very old and strongly forbidden legends. He hadn't believed it himself, of course. He'd been trying to give his followers a ray of hope in otherwise dark times, give them something specific to fight for, a homeworld and redemption. Now he had to revise all of that. Zonama Seacott was real, and it seemed not at all impossible that it could be the planet of legend. Of course, in the legends, it was taboo. Zonama Seacott certainly did not feel taboo. It didn't matter. This was his moment. With his prophecy proven true, more and more shamed ones would flock to him. His army would grow, unstoppable, until Shimra fell and No Manor rose. Yes. Rose to govern not the glorious Yuuzhan Vong, but a state of shamed ones. Ah well, better than death, and better than nothing. A gasp from Nen Yim cut short his reverie. He looked and saw her bent over yet another plant, one that consisted of long filament-like fronds.
What is it? He asked.
A limb tree, she murmured. She looked stunned. Or a very close relative.
No Manor had never heard of a limb tree.
I do not understand you.
The limb tree was a plant of the home world. It has long been extinct, except as a code in the Kong Kosa. I grew one for myself.
to adorn my apartment at Shimra's court.
And now you find one here? Curious?
No, not curious. Impossible. He waited for her to explain further. These other things, she said, these plants and creatures around us, they share much with our own biota at the cellular and molecular level. That is one thing I came here to confirm. The Sokoten ship might have been a fluke, a false similarity that arose from similar engineering. But this life you see all around us evolved naturally, or at least most of it did. It does not bear the mark of shaping. And though, as I said, there is reason to believe we are biologically related to all of this, no other species I have seen here corresponds on any one-to-one basis with the extinct life forms of the homeworld.
And yet this limb tree is one of our species.
Yes. The differences between this tree and a limb are small enough that they must have shared a common ancestor only a few millennia ago.
I still don't understand the significance.
She gave him an exasperated stare.
Relationship at the molecular level could be explained by a common ancestor millions or even billions of years ago. In all that time, it is not so far-fetched to believe that somehow life from our home galaxy was brought here by a long-extinct spacefaring race. Or merely as spores, riding the faint push of light and currents of gravity. But something as complex and specific as a limb tree cannot be explained in that way. It indicates more recent contact between this world and our own.
Perhaps Commander Vow left one behind.
When I accessed the Kankosa for my limb tree's genetic code, it had not been accessed in 1,000 years. The plant is of no use to a spacefaring race.
How do you explain it, then?
I can't. Perhaps there was an earlier ship. A world ship that left our galaxy long before the main fleet. Perhaps they came here.
She stopped.
No, that can only be conjecture. I need more data before I begin to talk like this.
No Manure smiled.
But I must say, it is enjoyable to hear you talk like this. Your passion is obvious. You are a credit to our people, Nenyim. You will find the right path for us.
That got a smile from her.
I thought that was your job.
I had the vision, but you are the one realizing it. I am little more than a passenger on this trip.
Your insight has been interesting, however.
I wish I understood enough about your work to be of real aid.
You can be, if you're willing to learn.
I'm eager to, he said.
Good. You carry the Kosa and record what I tell you. I'm going to collect a few live specimens of the arthropods living in that rotten log over there.
And with that, she placed a world of information into Nomanor's hand. He stared at it, feeling he had won a victory, not quite sure what to do with it.
Ah, Harar said. Success at last.
Looks like it, Corin said.
They were facing up a long, rocky ridge that showed a number of pronounced overhangs. Corin tried to hide his disappointment. Their search had carried them less than 1 kilometer from the downed ship, during which time he'd seen no signs whatsoever of civilization. Of course, it was hard to search thoroughly when you refused to take your eye off your search partner. He was a very long way from trusting Harar. Corin started up the slope, keenly aware of the person beside him, fighting reflexes that told him to draw his lightsaber now.
Is your home like this?
Harar asked. Oh, not really. I mean, it's got forests and fields, but for the most part, it's pretty civilized.
He frowned.
It is covered in cities?
Harar asked. If you're thinking about Coruscant when you say that, no.
They reached the top of the ridge in a few moments, which gave them an excellent view of the valley below. In fact, Corrin could see the Rexicotan ship, which was good. If anyone came looking from the air, that's what they would spot, and they would be near should such a search come. But not too near if the searchers were unfriendly.
"What is that?"
Harar asked. Corrin turned and looked the other way. The priest wasn't pointing. He didn't have to. Rising from the forest were three gigantic, identical metal vanes. They looked to be at least 300 meters tall. They were utterly familiar, but it still took him a long moment to recognize them. When he did, he felt suddenly lightheaded.
"I'm not sure," he lied.
"Perhaps we should investigate."
"Not today," Corrin said. "It'll be dark in a few hours, and we'll want to have the important stuff moved up here by then."
"Very well."
He was just delaying the inevitable, he knew. When the Yuuzhan Vong did figure out what those vanes were, they weren't going to be very happy. Not happy at all. He wanted a little time to prepare for that.
Ninyim glanced at Yuuzhan. He'd been working quietly on the task she had given him, entering the genetic sequences of various flora and fauna into her Khoisa. Now he seemed to be having trouble.
"What is it?" she asked.
"It ceased granting me admittance," he said.
"Did you try to access data forbidden to you?" Ninyim asked.
"Not to my knowledge, Master Yim. I was merely attempting to enter the Freeman signatures you asked me to."
"Pheromone," Ninyim corrected.
"It may be my security prohibitions were too broad. Let me see it."
He handed her the bulbous living memory in compliance.
"No," she said. "Because it is not keyed to you, after a time it rejects your entry."
She examined a bit further. She could reset his temporary access, but would only be forced to perform the same task again in a few hours. She could key him to the Khoisa, but she hesitated to do so. She had stored the protocol data on Sokoten biology in it, in the wrong hands. But the Prophet had proved himself useful, and only someone well-versed in the Shaper's arts could understand what they found there, much less use it. By the pattern of his rejected implants, she gathered that before being shamed, Yuuzhan had been an intendant.
Time was of the essence. "Come here," she said. "I will make you familiar to it."
That done, she was able to work for a time in peace. Until Harar came, standing rather imperiously, waiting for her attention. She reluctantly gave it to him.
"Yes," she said.
"I was wondering where your researchers were leading you," he asked. "Whether you've come to any new conclusions?"
Always that question.
"There have been a few developments," she allowed, "though they are at the level of data rather than conclusion."
"Go on, please. Anything new must be worth hearing."
"Take a seat," Ninyim said. "I will explain what I see here as best I can."
Harar settled into a cross-legged position and waited.
"The diversity of species here is quite low," she began, "much lower than one would expect in a natural ecosystem."
"What could cause such a thing?" Harar asked.
"Mass extinction, for one. Some catastrophe or series of catastrophes that serve to wipe out many of the species."
"That's an interesting fact, but..."
"No, it's more than an interesting fact," she averred. "The ecosystem functions as if it were fully diverse. Species have filled roles they were not designed for."
"I'm not sure I entirely understand."
"After any mass extinction, many ecological niches are opened, and species take advantage of these empty niches, adapting through natural selection to fill them and benefit from them. Eventually, after millennia, a ravaged ecosystem becomes healthy again,
and as diverse as the one that was impacted.
Isn't that what you said is occurring here?
Harar asked.
No, not at all. For one thing, the extinctions here are very recent. There hasn't been enough time for the sort of adaptation I speak of to take place. For another, species here are not adapting to fill ecological niches. They remain adapted to their own niches, the ones they evolved to fill. And yet they also perform the environmental tasks of extinct species, for no benefit to themselves.
She waited a moment to let him absorb that, enjoying the sudden breeze and the smell it brought, a sort of dusty golden scent.
Perhaps an example will help, she began again. There is, for instance, a plant with a kind of tubular blossom. The only possible way for it to reproduce is for an arthropod or other small creature to enter the tube of one plant and then enter that of another, carrying with it the sticky secretions of the first. The plant entices this insect with an edible fluid, nourishing to the insect. And, I suspect from certain clues, important to that insect's life cycle.
That makes sense, Harar said.
Yes, except that I can find no insect that feeds on the fluid. Yet I have seen them pollinated by another insect whose primary role in the ecosystem is feeding on carrion. Its life cycle, from egg to nymph to adult, revolves entirely around carrion. Yet they make time to enter these flower tubes with enough frequency to pollinate them, at no benefit to themselves.
Perhaps you have not yet discovered the benefit.
If this were the only example of such behavior, I might agree with you, she said. However, I find more than half the animals I have examined play roles in this life web that are plainly unrelated to their life cycles and physical design. More interesting yet, I have discovered that each species practices some form of reproduction control. When a particular sort of moss becomes scarce due to its consumption by a kind of beetle, the beetles begin disposing of their eggs without fertilizing them. In other words, the ecosystem of this planet is homeostatic. It seeks to remain in absolute balance. It manages to do so even after enormous extinction events.
That sounds reasonable.
For a world ship, yes, because each life form is engineered to play a certain role, and the system is guided by intelligence, by a Rikyam at one level, and by Shapers at the next. Mutations are eliminated, as is undesirable behavior. But in the natural ecosystems I've studied from data collected in this galaxy, that's not how things normally work. Each individual organism fights to maximize the number and survivability of its own offspring. Mutations come along that have advantages and are perpetuated. Such systems are in a constant state of flux. They are not cooperative. The evidence is that this world was once like that, like a wild planet. But it is no longer.
Harar pursed his lips.
You're saying that this planet has something like a Duryam, some intelligence that links all of these organisms together and prompts them to perform harmoniously.
I can think of no other explanation.
Yu Sha, who had remained absolutely silent, suddenly spoke up.
As I prophesied, he said,
and as the Jedi said, this is a living planet, one large organism, more than the sum of its parts. Like a world ship that made itself. Don't you see what this planet can teach us? Harar, you are just decrying the competition that destroys us.
It is that blind fight to ascend that leads us to treat so many of our people ashamed.
Can this be?
Harar asked Ninyim. He seemed to be ignoring the prophet.
We are seeing it, Ninyim replied. However, I can find no clues as to the mechanism that binds the individual life forms to one another. There are no chemical exchanges that might explain it. The flora and fauna here are not equipped with communications organs like our Vilip, or anything even remotely similar.
It's the force, Tahiri interrupted. I can feel the ties, feel a sort of constant chatter among, well, everything.
Ninyim focused on the young Jedi. I have heard that you Jedi possess telepathy like our Vilips, she said. But the ones I've taken apart, examined, showed no signs of specialized organs either.
No, of course not, Tahiri said, her voice suddenly dark. The Force binds everything together. Some creatures communicate through it.
And using this Force, you can impress your will upon others, yes? Yusha said.
Yes, on the weak-minded, Tahiri replied. But I get no sense that anything here on Zonama Seacot is being coerced into anything. It's like every living thing just agreed to do things this way. I cannot see this force, measure it, or test it, Ninyim said. I cannot credit it with the effect you assert.
A stone suddenly rose from the ground, floated toward Ninyim, and fell near her feet.
You may not know what it is, Tahiri said. You might not be able to see it or feel it, but you can see the results.
Ninyim conceded that with a small nod. Then a thought struck her with the force of a baton.
Assuming you are correct, she said, you are connected to this force, as no Yuuzhan Vong is, and yet, in part, you are Yuuzhan Vong. What does your force tell you this place is to us?
I've been thinking about that a lot, the young woman replied. I've never been able to quite put it into words until just now.
And? Harar asked.
Tahiri took a deep breath.
This is where we are from, she replied.
That got even Nomanor's attention. While the three were absorbed in the conversation, he'd been exploring Nenyim's Kosa and had run across some very interesting things. He'd made his little speech so as not to break character, not because he was interested. But now he stared at the young Jedi just as Harar and Ninyim did.
That's not possible, Ninyim said.
You asked me what I felt, the girl said.
That's it.
But didn't you say that only a few thousand years at most separate the life of this planet from Yuuzhan Vong life?
In the case of one plant only, Ninyim replied. And several thousand years ago, we were very far from here. Moreover, the Kang Kosa contains abundant data regarding the homeworld, and this is not it.
Was the homeworld like this one, living like an organism?
There are some legends,
Harar began.
Whatever the legends may say, Ninyim pronounced, the facts are that the homeworld was an ecosystem of unchecked competition and predation. Would a creature like the Vuasa have evolved on a world where all of nature was in cooperation? No. The Vuasa was a vicious predator that at times multiplied so quickly it left deserts behind it. This competition among ourselves you speak of is the legacy of the homeworld.
But perhaps that was after we lost the grace of the gods, Harar said.
Ninyim blinked at him, and Nomanor saw what he was certain was barely concealed disgust in the Shaper's expression.
In any event,
the Shaper said, apparently dismissing Harar's suggestion,
this conversation will not bear the fruit that further research will. If you will all please allow me to return to my work.
No Manor expected Harar to snap back, but instead, the priest nodded and looked thoughtful.
What in the world was going on here? Were they actually starting to believe his prophecy? Was he? Would they turn against Shimra?
They might. If Harar did, he might be able to muster a great deal of support from the priesthood.
And with this Shaper.
But no, if Harar turned against Shimra, it would be to put not the Prophet of the Shame Ones on the Polyp throne, but himself. And he was in a better position to do it than Yusha. Especially if Yusha never left Zonama Sikat. And there was also the chance that Harar already knew Nomanor's true identity. He had caught more than one suspicious look from the priest.
Yusha, Ninyam said, what are you doing?
I am sorry, Master, he said. It is just that today's revelations, I must ponder them.
You've been of enough help today, Ninyam told him. In fact, I would rather be alone for a time.
In that case, I will meditate in the splendor of this world.
He left the clearing and began wandering vaguely uphill. There were other things to consider. From what he had seen in her Kosa, Nen Yim had come here in fear of Zonama Sikat, prepared to destroy it if necessary. She had protocols that might be useful in that, though they were obviously untried. They were in the shorthand and symbolism of the Shapers, so she probably thought he couldn't understand them. What she didn't know was that he had done quite a bit of shaping himself. As she was no ordinary Shaper, he was no ordinary executor. He was certain he could understand and use the information if he had to, though why he would want to destroy the planet he couldn't say, except that it would please Shimra. That stopped him in his tracks. It would please Shimra a lot. If into that bargain was included the deaths of Corin Horn, who had so embarrassed the Yuuzhan Vong at Ithor, and Tahiri Vela, who had used her dual nature to betray them more than once, and a rogue priest and master shaper, even now plotting against not only Shimra, but the very nature of everything Yuuzhan Vong. Musing on that, he continued up the hill. Harar had mentioned something strange on the horizon. He stopped when he reached the summit, staring at the enormous made objects climbing into the sky, and was suddenly shaken to his very core. Harar had not spent enough time with the infidels, unlike Nomanor, who had flown on their lifeless ships and lived in their lifeless stations. Harar would naturally not understand what he was seeing. But Nomanor knew hyperdrive field guides when he saw them, even if they were 1,000 times larger than they should be. But then, they would have to be, to move a planet. Something clicked into place for Nomanor. He sat on the stone, listening to the sounds of the strange world for a moment. He was alone, for the first time since they had crashed. With a sigh, he released his face from the grotesque masker that hid it. He reached into the living pouch beneath his arm and removed the thing he had brought with him. He stared at it, turning it over in his hands. It was a dedicated villip, linked to one other far away. He stroked it to life. After a moment, the face of an intendant appeared on its surface, one of his former subordinates. Even through the medium of the villip, Nomanor could see the surprise.
You were assumed dead, the intendant said.
I greet you as well, Fa'anor, he told his Kresh cousin.
You might as well be dead,
Fa'anor said.
Shimra has called for your skin. I will have to report this conversation, of course.
Of course. I want you to. In fact, I want you to see that your villip comes before Shimra himself.
Before Shimra?
Fa sounded incredulous.
Yes. Send him the message that you have heard from me. Tell him I am on Zonama Sikat,
and that I have found his missing shaper. He will listen to you then. When you gain an audience, present him with your Vilip.